Hi, people. Welcome back to Dr. Sam's Musings. I hope you're having an amazing week so far. And I hope that you're slowly easing into things. It's been very interesting, you know, with all the new year, new me motivational quotes and everything flying around. And so it's very interesting to see the energy with which people, you know, bounce into the new year. And whilst that in itself is not a bad thing, I feel like, you know, anytime that you can reset goals for yourself, you should do so. It's also very interesting to see that a lot of people start with unrealistic targets. And once you have a target that is completely overwhelming, you're less likely to achieve it. I mentioned this in the last episode as well. Whilst, you know, it's very important for us to set goals, and for your goals to work, they have to be challenging, but they have to be specific as well. So if your goal is to save 10,000 naira every day, for the rest of the year, or to save 10,000 or 100,000 or whatever $1,000 by the end of the year, you have to be very specific about how you're going to achieve those goals. And that's why I always say bite-size your goals to the smallest unit possible. $10,000 by the end of the year is less than $1,000. Let's even use a rounded number. Let's say you want to earn $12,000 by the end of the year in savings. So that would mean that every month you have to save $1,000. That would mean that for every, you know, working day, you have to save a specific amount. That will mean if your products are $100 each, or if your products are $10 each, you would have to sell a certain number of products to reach that target, to earn a certain revenue to now make you able to save $1,000 a month. So you have to honestly look at what you have in your hands and see if it's possible for you to use it to achieve your goals. And if it's not, you have to learn how to tweak things in your favor. So it's not about putting a number to things or saying, oh, before the end of this year, I must lose 10 kg. Losing 10 kg would mean doing certain things a certain way consistently for a certain period of time. So is that something that you can do? And if you cannot do it, what is holding you back from doing it? And so on and so forth. But not to, you know, digress from this week's topic too much. If you follow me on Instagram, you already know what the topic is. And I just want to talk about emotional mastery. And it's not something that I can talk about in one podcast episode. It's a whole, you know, course. And it's a non-ending learning journey of mastering your emotions. Because the thing is, you might feel like you're very emotionally intelligent, and you go through another trial that reminds you of the fact that you only have emotions commensurate to what you're going through at a particular time. The tougher and the more detailed your trials are, the tougher the emotions are. So you never truly fully master your emotions. You can master them to a certain level, but and you can have tools and tricks and tips that help you master them at any level, but you never get, you know, so confident in assuming that there's no emotions that can come and shake me up badly anymore. No, it's a lifelong journey. The intensity of the emotions comes and goes, changes with every single thing that you face. And when I talk about emotions, I don't mean only the unpleasant ones. I mean, even the really, really good emotions. You know, we have to learn to master our emotions. There's a quote that says, master your emotions, master your life. I don't like to use quotes like that because we cannot master our lives. Our lives are not truly in our hands to master. You know, we have a higher power that is in charge of that has already mastered our lives. But what I like the message behind the quote, which is, if you can master your emotions, then you are in better control of the things that you have control over. Let's put it that way. So there are things that we will never have control over that are always going to be in God's hands. The when things happen, the how things happen, those are in God's hands. But we also have free will, right? So in Islam, we believe in qadr, which is predestination, which means that certain things will come to pass, whether we like it or not, whether we approve of it or not, whether they make us feel good or not. And we don't have control over those things, but we always have control because God also gave us free will. We always have control over how we react to those things. And that in itself is the trial that we face. The reaction to the things that happen in our lives are the trials that we face. And the reactions are 100% filled by our emotions. So if we cannot control those emotions, we have a huge tendency to make rash decisions, to do a lot of things that we will regret later, or to just, you know, be in particular states of mind that are hugely detrimental and do not serve us in any way. But before we can even delve into emotional mastery, we have to first of all understand what emotions are. Emotions, and I don't want to use a scientific or proper definition. I want to give a definition based on my understanding of emotions. Emotions, I always say, they're like little elves that work in your body. And they all have their functions. And let's not forget again that emotions were given to us by God Almighty. So they're not useless. They're not just there for fancy. They have specific purposes. And like I said, everything that we experience in life are, you know, seen through the lenses of our emotions. So if you are going somewhere, for example, and you feel a sense of fear or you feel a sense of anxiety, that is something or someone, or you're being reminded to be cautious. It's like, be careful, be careful. And I always say anything that makes you afraid is a reminder to pray. So you're going on a journey and you get to a particular part of the road and you're suddenly uncomfortable. That is a reminder to pray. Happiness for me is a reminder to be grateful, to send thanks, and also a note of caution. Calm down. You're excited. Calm down. Don't make any decisions when you're in this state. Calm down. Take a step back and make sure you're making the right decisions. You know, anger is usually an ego trip. It's usually something has, you know, disrespected you, or something has pushed back against your ego, or something like that. So anger for me is a trigger for you to check yourself first. You know, is this an ego trip? Am I really being disrespected, or do I feel like this person? You know, there's so many things that you can extract from your emotions. And the more you are able to take a step back from your emotions, the more you're able to be like, you know what, happiness, chill. Anger, chill. Anxiety, chill. Let me understand what's going on first. The more you're able to not react based on your emotions, the better decisions you're going to make, and the better you're going to be able to handle whatever comes your way in life. So the first thing you have to understand are the emotions, the types of emotions. Know your triggers. What is it that I've noticed in my life that every time I'm exposed to makes me feel a certain way? Like, everybody has their pet peeves. Everybody has the things that irritates them. Everybody has the things that makes them automatically angry. Everybody has things that makes them automatically happy or excited. People have things that make them anxious. Identify your triggers and note them so that anytime you come in contact with them, you have some sort of guard up. You know that, okay, this thing makes me excessively angry. I need to be able to control this emotion. So, for example, there are people that cannot stomach disrespect of any nature. So if people don't greet them a certain way, or if they greet them a certain way, or if they don't do certain things, they get so upset. Like, excuse me, like, ah, you know, she was disrespectful, she was this, she was that. And a lot of times, I always say that sometimes it's just an ego trip, because to you, this person is, you know, younger than you, or this person is inferior to you by some way or in some way. And so they should kind of defer to you. So when you see something like that, you have to be able to stop yourself and think, is she really being disrespectful? Is this how she has been raised? Is this what she knows as respect? Is it this? Is it that? Is it this? Is it that? When you begin to have those conversations in your head, when you identify your triggers, it helps you manage the situation better. So the first thing is to know your emotions, name them, identify your triggers, and kind of understand what it is about those things that trigger that response in you. The same thing with feelings of excitement and happiness. There's some people that once they have money like this, they're the happiest people in the world, and they can make promises for Africa. Ah, don't worry, I got you, because they're riding on that excitement. So they feel like, they think that they're always going to be in that feeling of euphoria forever that will carry them to, you know, want to do things for people. But something can happen in a week and all the money is gone, or they spent all the money. And then you're like, ah, okay, how far now? You promised to do so and so. And the person's like, I beg. You know, because they reacted in the face of elation. They gave you a response in the face of a happy emotion. And they didn't stop to think, you know what, if I'm not feeling like this in a week, you know, am I really sure that I can do this thing for this person? So if you know that once you have money, or once somebody buys you shawarma, or once you're excited and you're happy, know your triggers. Know that, look, I know that I'm riding on euphoria right now. This is not the best time for me to make decisions or to make promises. And there's even I can't remember now if it's a hadith or just a quote from Ibn al, I don't know, I can't remember if it was a hadith of the Rasul or a quote from Ibn al-Qayyim that said, do not make decisions, or do not speak when you're in two states, when you're happy and when you're angry. So learn how to master even your pleasant emotions. And another thing about emotions is that a lot of times we take on other people's emotions, because when you go on a journey of EQ or EI, emotional intelligence, you understand that there are different parts of it. There's your reaction, there's taking on another person's reaction, and you know the role that they have to play in your emotions that you have to really, really understand. And so sometimes certain situations that are triggers for us, or certain situations that, you know, piss us off, are us taking on other people's emotions. So you're able to, you know, you're there, you're doing your thing, but you don't know that this person is angry, or this person is happy, or this person is going through, is anxious, or this person is afraid. And then you react with your own emotions to their own emotions. So you have to also understand the art of what I call healthy deflection. You have to be able to stop and make excuses for people. And this is why making excuses is heavy in Islam, because a lot of times the things that people project upon us are truly not about us. They're dealing with their own emotions. So they're dealing with the things that they're going through, you know, in their lives too. And we take that on. And I always joke, like the other day, my mother was laughing in the car because somebody was driving roughly, and I was like, I beg, maybe his wife is in labor, maybe he needs to poo. And I use that thing all the time, that I will think that, you know, by now everybody will be like, okay, Sam, we know. But he still laughed about it, and it made him, you know, just calm down. It, not like he was like mad or anything, but he was just like, why is this person driving like this? And I'm like, I beg, leave you, maybe his wife is in labor, maybe he wants to poo poo. And he just laughed, and that was that. So sometimes just making excuses for people, using humor to diffuse situations, like when people come into the store and they're a bit funny, I'll just be thinking, maybe her period is coming, or maybe she had a fight with her husband. I beg, it's not about us, let's not take it on. And then you now notice that the same person can come in a month later, and they're the most pleasant, sweetest people. So imagine if you have labeled them as such, or you've held some sort of grudge against them. They might just have been having a bad day, you know, that they projected upon you. Maybe they haven't gone on their journey of emotional mastery yet, and unfortunately, you know, put that emotion on you. And you should be able to healthily deflect it and be like, no, this isn't about me. I'm going to control my emotions if this person cannot control their emotions. And, you know, one of the situations that this comes to play a lot is when you're a parent. You know, children, especially little children, are unable to emotionally regulate. So as the parent, as the adult, as the one who should have some handle on their own emotions, a child cannot be kicking a tantrum and then you are also screaming and getting mad. You know, one person has to be able to take control of the situation. I know it's a lot easier said than done. I'm raising teenagers now, so I know that it's so difficult mastering your emotions around, you know, them. You know, it's for children, for example, when my kids were younger, it was hard, but it's not as hard as with teenagers, because there was still some level of deference. With teenagers, they feel like they're grown. They feel like they have an opinion. They feel like they're right and you're wrong. So there's kickback. There's talk back sometimes. There's attitude. There's all sorts of things that you have to deal with. So as a parent, you have to understand that they're going through the second phase of their lives where they're learning how to emotionally regulate. So they're not always being rude. They're not always being, they're testing boundaries. They're learning coping mechanisms as well. They're lashing out without knowing what is going on with them, because evolving into teenagers is a psychological, you know, also it's such an interesting journey that even they don't understand themselves so much. And I always tell my daughter, especially, that sometimes she behaves as if she's manic depressive, God forbid, and I don't like to use labels, and she's definitely not manic depressive. But I'm just saying that she can wake up in the morning and be the moodiest witch. And by the end of the day, she's the funny, laughing, happy person. I'm like, who are you? Like, how many parts are there to you? Or like, she has multiple personality disorder. But when you know that they're just at that phase in their lives where they're emotionally regulating. And me, for example, I suffer from really bad PMS sometimes, where I'm just extremely moody and irritable. So I caught my daughter the same slack. Like, I monitor her period dates. So if I know that it's 1 week to her period and she's being extra sassy, I'll let her know that, look, I know that you're going through something, but don't let that make you disrespectful. Like, learn to manage your emotions. And she'll be like, no, it's not because of that. I'm like, okay, whatever. But just don't use that as an excuse to be rude and things like that. So sometimes one person just has to take charge of the situation. So your children are not always being rude. They're not always being, and you know, and even if they're being moody, like, don't you have moody periods? They might have had a bad day at school. A friend might have said something to them that they don't want to talk to you about, but it's bothering them. You know, things like that. We have bad moods. We have bad, you know, days. Why are they not allowed to have bad moods? Just because they are children and they need to jump and kowtow to everything that we say or do. So I'm just saying that when you understand the roles that emotions play, even in your parenting journey, you will learn how to kind of do better with understanding your children and handling certain situations better. It doesn't mean that you make unnecessary excuses for them. It just means that you are calmer in the situation. And sometimes when one person is calm, it really diffuses the situation. Like with my kids, I'll just be like, I'm not going to do a back and forth with you. Go and do what I ask you to do. There'll be consequences. I'm not going to shout and scream all the time because you're frustrating me. Because then nothing is going to get done. I'm just going to get a headache and a hoarse voice. So I'm just going to stay calm. I'm going to be like, look, you can say what you want. You can be sassy all you want, but I've told you what I need done. If you don't do it by so and so time, there'll be consequences. Oftentimes they'll stomp off, they'll whine, they'll whatever, but it gets done and I don't have a headache and I'm calm and I'm happy. She can, and like, there's no need shouting and screaming, why didn't you do that? No, it doesn't serve anything. So you go into yourself, you're like, this child is pissing me the hell off, but I'm going to stay in control of this situation. I'm not going to be reactive to their rubbish, and I'm going to be the adult. I'm going to stay calm, and I'm going to talk to them in a respectful tone, but a very firm tone. And that's usually what gets the job done. And then, you know, on your journey to emotional mastery as well, you have to understand that you're not a robot. You're not always going to be able to turn or turn off those emotions. It's never going to be a case of, I've gotten it right. You know, no, there are days that your emotions will overpower you. There are days that you just will not have the strength to do what you need to do. And especially, you know, if you are a very deeply spiritual person as well, you know what should be done. You know what you're feeling, you know what you should do, but your spiritual side or your emotional side, you know, your spiritual side and your emotional side are just not, you know, gelling, or your emotional side and your physical side are just not gelling. Maybe you know that, for me to beat this emotional funk, I need to get up and go and do something, but your body is like, look, you're on your own, I'm not going anywhere, I'm not doing anything, and you're just in a slump. You know, occasionally allow yourself, just be there, let the emotions run riot. And I was telling someone the other day, I said, give yourself a time limit to it. Tell yourself, I'm going to allow myself to wallow in it for one day. I'm not going to do anything, but it cannot stay till tomorrow. So you're looking at the clock, it's 9 o'clock. I have 3 more hours to get my act together. It's 11 o'clock, I have an hour. Honestly, it does wonders on your mindset. Allow yourself, like, I've allowed these emotions run riot, but I cannot let them stay for more than X amount of time. So you're constantly telling yourself, okay, feel everything you need to feel now, because tomorrow you're not going to give yourself this kind of time. So sometimes allow them run riot, allow them do what they need to do, and then get up and, you know, take charge of the situation again. And another thing about emotional mastery is understanding that you're not supposed to suppress your emotions. It's not a case of, I cannot let this emotion bubble to the surface. I cannot get angry. I cannot be happy. I cannot be tense. No, it's not about that. It's about you identifying the emotion and facing it head on. I am angry. I admit that I'm angry. Is my anger commensurate to this situation? Should I really be angry? If I'm, you know, just poking through it and understanding, okay, what exactly about this situation makes me angry? This guy drove bad, or he drove in a way that endangered my life. Okay, am I angry because he could have spoiled my car, which would have now? Am I angry because he seems to be in a hurry? Just poke through the emotions. And it's not like, oh, every conversation in your head is going to be about mastering emotions. No, it's just when you realize that I get angry a lot and I really want to work on this, or I make rash decisions when I'm happy. I really want to work on this. Identify what you want to work on. When you know the triggers that get you to that state, you now begin to identify certain patterns. Okay, I've noticed that is when XYZ happens that I get angry. I've noticed that is when XYZ happens that I get very anxious. Okay, this is a common factor in this situation, in that situation. So this is something that triggers my anger. How can I work on it? You know, things like that. You have to kind of go on a journey with yourself, by yourself, to identify your triggers and to know how to either avoid them or to deal with them better. So emotional mastery is not about, oh, I'm going to suppress my emotions. That never ends well. They will come up and they would have become more intensified and concentrated. It means I'm going to face it head on. Yes, I'm afraid. Yes, I'm anxious. What exactly about this situation is making me afraid and anxious? Okay, what can I do about it? And I know I've given this example before. One of my best example. So in fact, let me even use a different example. So day before yesterday, I've mentioned this before, my current laptop, the app that I use on it to write had an issue. So I went to pick my old Sony Vaio to write my third book. And my book is done. I was doing a final edit of the last chapter of the book. And all of a sudden, my laptop stopped charging. I was like, okay, this is not funny. But I stayed calm. I was like, I just said, Yalla, it's in your hands. And this was at night, so there was even nothing I could do about it. So the next day, I sent my driver to Banex to go and get me a new battery. He was like, a new charger. I said, there's nothing wrong with the charger. It's the battery. But they don't have the battery here. They'll have to order it from Lagos, and there's no guarantee that they'll have it because it's a different type of laptop. It's an old type of laptop. Yada, yada, yada. The old me would have started crying. Just from, oh my God, what am I going to do? My manuscript, my this. I would have started crying. But I was just like, okay, ask them that is there somewhere else that you can check. It was like, yes, they said they should go to zone 3, something, something, something. I said, okay, so go to the zone 3 now and go and find out if you can get the battery. All this while, I was even gisting my teammates in the store that this is what's happening. Like, my book. I said, well, I have an old backup on a hard drive. So worst case scenario, I'll just have to do more work and get it up to, you know, which should have been a lot of work though. I'll have to do more work because the last backup I have on my hard drive was before any type of edit, just the whole book before any type of, you know, edit. And I've done probably about 3 edits since then. So I was like, worst case scenario, I'll just have to re-edit everything again and whatnot. So I just remained very calm. So they came back, they got the battery, everything. And I was like, alhamdulillah. Only for me to get home that day, I was like, let me do this thing and be done with it. And it started showing the notification that the battery wasn't compatible with the laptop. I felt the anxiety rising up. I felt the sadness riding up because I couldn't do anything. But I just said, you know what, Sam, be calm, say a prayer, and just try again. So I just made a dua. I said, Yafata. Yafata is the opener, like the way make. I said, Just make me able to copy this manuscript. Just give me the opportunity to copy this manuscript. I put on my laptop, put in the hard drive, and just as I copied the manuscript, the message started flashing again. In fact, actually, the message started flashing before it finished copying, but it didn't stop the copying process. Unlike the first time that I put on the computer and I couldn't do anything because the message was there, and I copied my manuscript. And for the first time, I was able to even transfer it to my phone in a read and write copy. All the other times that I've been able to transfer it to my phone, I've gotten only a read-only copy. I don't know what happened. I don't know how it happened. But for some reason, this time I was able to open it on my Pages app and I could even edit straight from my phone, which makes my work a lot easier and a lot faster. So because I had stayed calm, I had stayed zen, I recognized that, look, you're getting anxious. Calm down. What can you do in this situation now to make things better? You have to, what you need to do, okay, what will make this thing go away is you need to copy a sample of your work onto your hard drive. Okay, how can you do that? And just thinking rationally and suppressing that fear of, hey, God, I'm going to lose this manuscript, I'm going to have to start over again, made me work faster, made me work smarter, and I got what I needed. The same thing with COVID. When COVID started picking up, I had a very, very intense, fearful phase, as in, it was a day or two, but it was just very scary. And it's because before that, I'd read this book about this horrible virus that ran riot and led to this like zombie apocalypse. Not zombie as regards Walking Dead, but zombie as regards how, you know, completely dilapidated, completely debilitating it was to the human race. So I was like, oh my God, was this like a foretelling of the, you know, it was just scary. And then I just sat down with myself and I'm like, what is scaring you about this thing? First of all, the book was fiction. Don't you remember who Allah is? Tawheed. Nobody can tell the future. Da, 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 da. So I gave myself that pep talk. And then I was like, okay, what are you afraid of? That you'll fall ill, that will run out of food. Okay, what can you do to mitigate that? So I just went, I started buying dry foods. I started stocking up on medicines. And just the fact that I was taking action was taking the anxiety away. So in Islam, tawakkul, which is, you know, relying upon Allah, is you have faith in him and then you tie your camel. Literally, you do what you need to do. And for me, that's one of the things that you need the most for emotional mastery. Action. What am I afraid of? What can I do to mitigate that thing that I'm afraid of? And then you face it. What is worst case scenario? What is best case scenario? If I get worst case scenario, okay, what are the things that I'm afraid of? Okay, somebody will die. If that person dies, well, if all of us will die eventually, like, how would that really change our lives? What can we do now to ensure that it's not a horrible transition and things like that. Once you face it head on, you can't take power away from it because you're thinking rationally, you're being proactive and things like that. So emotional mastery is also being able to face what you're afraid of or face what you're anxious about or face what you're upset about, poking through it and really, really, you know, taking what serves you from it and discarding what doesn't serve you from it. And this is where we also, I'm going to end with this, is where you go into the circles. And there are three circles that I used to teach, you know, these things. I can't even remember the heading now, but it's usually just the circles of control. And in the middle of the three circles is the circle of control. These are things that you have direct control over. Where you go, what you wear, what you see, what you do, how you treat people, you know, your value system, you have direct control over things like that. And then around the circle of control, which is a slightly bigger circle, is a circle of influence, the things that your actions can influence. The way you treat people can make them treat you better. The way you know, your value system can influence certain things and things like that. And then outside of that circle, which is usually the biggest circle, is the circle of things that you have no control over. You have no control over whether coronavirus 2, upgraded version 2.0 is going to come back. You have no control over whether, you know, in 5 years' time, you're going to be poor. You have no control over whether there's going to be war in Nigeria. You have no control over certain things. And you should never find yourself in that circle. Because it does nothing for you. It debilitates you. It scares you. And you cannot take action over it. So stay within your circle of control and use it to influence, you know, the things that directly affect you in your circle of influence. And if you can stay within that circle of control where you don't allow yourself go into the places that you cannot control, you have a lot more control over your emotions because you can think more rationally. You can take action. So you're going into, maybe you're starting a new job and you're going into a new workplace and you're anxious. Ah, will I get along? Or even a student, will I make friends? Will I get along with my co-workers and things like that? You have some control over that. You can decide, you know what, I'm going to go in, I'm going to be very pleasant. I'll introduce myself to people. I will, you know, make myself approachable to answer whatever questions that they have with the hope that, you know, that will make, but you're taking action because you have some level of influence over that outcome. You know, am I a good Muslim? What can I do to become a better Muslim? I can say my prayers on time. I can do this. I can, the things that you have control over, focus your energies on those things and they would automatically trickle into the things that you influence. So I don't want this to run for more than 30 minutes and I'm almost out of time and out of steam as well. But I've been all over the place. I didn't put down any notes or anything for this. So I'm just rambling on for my head. But everybody, I think you owe it to yourself. If you're going to do one thing for yourself this year, it's try and go on a journey of emotional mastery. Unfortunately, I cannot recommend many books. I think the only book I've ever read was a book, was a book called Emotional Mastery. But for me, it's really about my life's journey. It's really about how I notice that I respond to certain situations in different ways. I'm a deeply, deeply emotional person, but I'm very thankful that I have very soft emotions. So I'm the kind of person that has a bigger tendency to be sad than mad. So I would go in on myself, or I would cry, or I'll be moody. So I'm not the kind of person that has blowouts or gets upset or shouts, but I can be moody and I can be sulking. But I've also realized that in recent times, in the past 2-3 years, I've been able to handle that a lot better. And especially last year, I grew a lot emotionally last year, in that things that would naturally trigger me, or things that would naturally make me upset or lead me into a funk, I was able to just be like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not going down this road. What is it about the situation that is upsetting me? Deal with it, move on. And I just felt like, you know, I left 2023 a more emotionally healthy person. So if you're like me, I know that you're highly emotional, especially, please go on a journey of emotional mastery. Like, it will literally change your life. It will literally change your life. And with that, I've come to the end of this episode. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you find some gems. Like I said, it's not something that we can cover in just one episode. But if you've picked one or two things from it, then I've done a good job. I will be back here again next week. Have an amazing rest of the week, guys. Bye.